welcome to the Negative Positives Podcast, episode 320. Your host, Mike Gutterman, coming from the Gutterman Cave here in a hot and sultry, sweaty Louisville, Kentucky. And this is episode 320. What does that mean? It's a roundtable episode. We always really enjoy these where we get to have guests on the show that have been on before, and we discuss all the hot topics. So we're looking forward to that. But before we get to the guests, let's get to everyone's favorite co-captains. We'll start out in the City of Angels, La La Land, Los Angeles, California. Mr. Andre Dominguez, how you doing tonight, Andre?
Doing all right, Mike. How are you?
Good. You're probably going to hear a little fan noise in the background. I had to step up to a little larger fan tonight, and there's no way I'm turning it off because it's hot as hell in here. So there's going to be a little fan noise going on here.
I'm sorry. Aren't you the one who's always saying bring on the hot weather?
I know. Yeah, that is true. And I'm not complaining. I'm just saying, make little changes to the lifestyle here and there, just a little fan action. It's hot topics we're going to discuss on this show. I don't want to burst into flames because this show is going to just be so hot anyway. So, I just got to take precautions. Right. So, all right. So, and then all the way out in, let's see, we're going to go with, we're gonna go with Dayton, California, and that would be Roxanna Angles. How are you doing tonight, Roxanna?
Oh, it's sweltering here in Palm Desert, California. We are in triple digits, 115, sweating my butt off.
Woo! That's hot. That's hot. All right, and our guest for this roundtable edition, we brought back, back by popular demand. I like to think that we get these two guests on here. And first, start off with Mr. Sam Warner, known for the Unrecovering Photography Addict webpage, and just all around good guy in the community. How you doing tonight, Sam?
Hi, doing great, Mike. Thanks for having me back.
Oh, absolutely. And Sam, I know you're in Ohio, right? But what town are you actually in?
Just south of Dayton.
Okay, so yeah. you're close to Roxanna then.
Yeah, really close. We're neighbors.
Oh, that's funny that I just pulled that out of the random, but maybe I had subliminally had you in the back of my mind there, Sam. That must be it. You're always on my mind, Sam. I don't know if you know that. I don't know if you're creeped out.
That's not creepy at all, Mike.
All right, and our other distinguished guest, everybody knows him, everybody loves him, Mr. Mike Padua from shootfilmco.com. Mike, how you doing tonight?
I'm doing good. I'm coming at you from Dayton, Montana. And no, I'm just kidding. No, I'm doing really good. I'm doing really good. Speaking of the sweltering heat, it's a balmy 78 degrees where I am here in Northern California. Really, really, really suffering up here. So right. I'm going to be all right, though. Okay.
Mike, you're in, is it now, correct me, is it Benicia or Benicia, California? Is that how it's pronounced? What is the correct pronunciation of that?
It's Benicia. But here's Benicia. The thing. Yeah. There's a local contingency of people who pronounce it differently. And uh-huh. I'm not going to tell you how they pronounce it because they're wrong.
Well, it's much like Louisville. It's either Louisville, Louisville, Louisville.
There's
all, yeah. All sorts of them. And, but all right, well, that's everybody that's on the show tonight. And I'm very excited about this lineup, but I think the first thing we want to do before we get into the hot topics, the round table, which will start in the next segment, we want to kind of catch up, with everybody, see what they've been up to since it's been a while since Mike and Sam have been on the show. And hey, it's been 2 weeks since I've talked to Andre and Roxanna. So we're going to do that first. And we always start off with Mr. Andre Dominguez. Andre, what have you been up to, brother?
I mean, not too much, Mike. Over the 4th of July weekend, didn't particularly have any huge plans or, congregations with other people planned because of COVID. And so Audrey and I just ended up kind of staying home. I ran a bunch of tests with shooting my manual flash indoors with a few different film stocks, including some slide film. And played some video games, watched some movies, and once we started hearing the fireworks going off, we ended up just hopping in my car, driving to where we could kind of see them a little bit more clearly. They weren't blocked by any trees or anything. And then we rolled the seats back, the two front seats, opened the sunroof, took our shoes off and stood on top of the chairs so that we, from the waist up, we were kind of out of the sunroof, and then just watch the you know, very, very beautiful illegal fireworks show in Culver City, California, as the night kind of wound down to a little bit of an unexpected but still rather pleasant 4th of July among, you know, the backdrop of this global health pandemic. So overall, not too bad. Had a little bit of photography and gearing up for the big old trip to Big Bear next weekend.
Awesome. Andre, I have to admit, as you were telling that story, as you were winding that story down, I thought for sure you were going with like Yum Yum Night. I thought for sure that was coming.
Roxana, how was your week?
are you ending yours then, Andre? Yes, is that my cue?
Yes, ma'am.
I don't think he wants to dive any deeper into that that subject.
Apparently not. Well, all right. This last couple of weeks, lots of staying home. Brian set up a movie screen outside by the pool, so we've been having our hot nights here by the pool watching movies. So that's been fun. That's what we did for 4th of July. Watched Hamilton by the pool. And let me see. I got a camera for my program from Michael Dodds he's from Missouri, and he sent over a KS500 Sears camera. So that's kind of
nice.
Rad. Yeah.
Oh, that's
and
cool.
It,
that's
it,
awesome.
It's really cool. Yeah. So even though I'm not seeing students yet, I let them know that, you know, with the current situation, I'm not sure what's happening yet, but it's on hold for when we get the program up and running again.
And I guess that's like a Ricoh branded camera, probably they made for Sears, that probably Pentax K mount, I'm guessing.
I think so. I don't know too much, but it's a KS500 Sears camera. So yeah, I think so. I think you're right. Mm-hmm. And it's a nice looking camera. It's definitely going to get some use out of it. So that's exciting.
Very cool. Very cool.
Yeah. And other than that, I did a trade virtual shoot with Suzanne Lopez. She's my passion, my vision on Instagram.
Yeah. She's a great account. Yeah.
Yeah. She has. We share the same similar style. You know, we both like the fun, colorful, you know, we were always going back and forth. So we did a trade. First I asked her to do a virtual shoot, and then she shot back at me. She's like, well, if you do it too. And I was like, oh shit. Okay. I'm not used to being on the other side, but fine. Oh, we had a blast. So that was good. And Very cool. Other than that, that about sums my couple weeks off.
Awesome. Well, let's go with Sam next. So Sam, what have you been up to lately?
Actually, today was the first day back to work after a couple of weeks off for a vacation. We went out of town for a week. We had rented this kind of secluded beach house in the Outer Banks. So it was perfect for COVID. There was absolutely nobody around. And then
very nice.
This last week was just kind of a staycation, trying to get some things done around the house and develop some of the film that I shot while we were out of town.
Did you shoot a lot of film?
Yeah, I did 7 rolls that week. So
nice.
I think I've still got 2 rolls to go, and tried out some cameras I've never shot before. The Holga wide pinhole was one of them. So
nice. That's right. Yeah. We had a little message thread about that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Your shots look great from that thing. Do you like it as much as I do? I love that camera.
Oh, I do. I'm definitely going to be shooting it more. It was cool.
Very cool. All right. And so anything else, Sam?
No, that's pretty much it.
Oh, it surprises nobody. That's more than I did. So, let's move on to Mr. Mike Padua. So Mike, it's been a while since we've had you on the show. What have you been up to?
Well, the last couple of weeks been pretty busy, you know, with like the 4th of July holiday and all. Mm-hmm. I sent off, I think, my last 3 months worth of film to the darkroom. So I got a bunch of rolls of film back. I wait way too long to send off like a film to get developed. Right. And so I sent off 3 months worth of film, and I just got those scans back a couple of days ago. So, oh, wow. So I've been kind of going through that and trying to find the, those diamonds in the rough, you know, and just like, hanging it's out.
It's like Christmas when you get that much back, right? Like
exactly. So, yeah. Yeah. Like Christmas. So just kind of going through that. Also, I got some bad yet good news. I have to move out of my office space, but find a new office space. However, I think I found a new office space in a better building, like a better spot in a better building. So
there you go.
So yeah, I think I'm trying to get that lease all worked out. So, you know, I'm not looking forward to moving an office, but you know, it's going to be a better spot. So I'm kind of trying to frame it positively. You know what I mean?
Right. So not necessarily looking forward to moving a 10,000 Shoot Film Co. T-shirts and merchandise to.
Oh God! You know what I'm most looking for? I have this solid cherry wood desk.
Right.
Like I don't even know how I got this desk, but for some reason I have it in my office. It's super heavy. I don't know how I'm going to move it. So that's the thing I'm worried about.
Right. Right. Yeah. Anything that's made out of all of our furniture is made out of the IKEA, like particle wood stuff. And you don't move it because you build it one time. And if you move it, it just falls apart. So you just, yeah. It's, so there you go. That's you don't have any choice. You just buy new ones, I guess. But
right. Exactly. Just order another one. Yeah.
Right. Right. The disposable society we live in, I guess. But yeah. All right. Well, as far as is that pretty much all you got, Mike?
Yeah, that's it.
Hey, I was thinking about this. I don't know if this had happened the last time you were on the show, but you, I remember it's been a while, but you got like U.S. citizenship, right? Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct. It was actually, time has flown. I became a citizen in May of 2019, May 22nd, okay, so 2019. So
we probably, we might've discussed it last time you were on, or I'm not sure if we did or not, but if not, I just wanted to say, hey, congratulations. You know, well, there you go.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that.
Very cool. And hopefully we can be congratulating Andre on that one of these days, right, Andre?
Hopefully, you know, it was kind of bad timing with all this COVID stuff. But, you know, once U.S. immigration, you know, procedures kind of get back up online and I can go do my interview, it should be smooth sailing.
There you go. Well, I mean, they have 300 and some episodes to listen of this episode of this show to try to do background checks on you, Andre. So I think you're gonna be all right, right? okay. Well, as far as my week, again, not much photography. Did a little bit of just some family snapshots of the APS, the hottest trend in film photography taking over the world by storm. But not a whole lot of photography, but. I will happily announce, maybe happily and unhappily announce it. We finally, after 20 years, bought our first new vehicle in 20 years. And so we now have a reliable vehicle. We bought a 2020 Ford Escape and made right here in Louisville, Kentucky, which it's kind of cool to get a car that's made in your own town. But I love it. And Andre and I were talking, oh gosh, sometime this week, late at night. And Andre asked me if I had any gas for anything. And I was like, you know, I really don't. And that's a good thing because let's just say the Gutterman budget got way tighter this week after now we got a car payment. So it's a good thing that I have a freezer full of film and no cameras on the want list right now because, yeah, just got a little bit tighter budget. But the good thing about it is, like, you know, we were afraid because our vehicles were like 20 years old. I was afraid to even do like a 2-hour trip to some town in Kentucky to like do photography or do like a day, you know, with the family, like anywhere, even like any kind of long drive whatsoever. Now that we have a reliable vehicle, I could see how that could help my photography a little bit. I could actually take a day trip that's, you know, 2 or 3 hours from my house and not worry about a 20-year-old car breaking down and leaving us stranded in August weather at 100 degrees on the side of the freeway somewhere. But so that was I'm hoping that will help me a little bit kickstart my photography. But I will say that I was off this week from Ford Motor Company. We had a summer shutdown where it's like a maintenance. They shut down for July 4th week for factory maintenance or whatever. And so I thought I was going to get a whole lot done, but in the process of buying a new vehicle, that's a scary thing. And that took a good part of my week. But then I did do something though. And I released not one, not two, not three, but four music albums this week. And they're not actually albums. They're not like albums that I released thinking like people are going to want to listen to this, and you listen through it straight through and it's an album. These were tracks that I've recorded over the last several years that I have been using as like background music for this podcast. And like on solo shows, when it's just one of us talking, even back when Andre did solo shows, I would insert music underneath the person, because on a solo show, it seems kind of dry, just one person talking. So we would always put a little music in the background to kind of, you know, add a little more zing to a solo show or whatever. So I spent like a lot of time over the last several years recording like single, like guitar track tunes, just for use as background music. And so I got to thinking, I was going through my audio annals or whatever, not my audio anals. That's a whole other thing.
Those two.
and I realized I had a ton of this stuff, and I was like, well, okay, what can I do with it other than just use it for solo shows? You know, maybe I could try to flesh them out into full featured songs, but I don't really want to go back and revisit them. It's already been done. So I thought, well, how about I just put them out there for any other podcasters or YouTube content creators or anyone out there in the community or any creatives that need background music for any of their productions? How about I just put this stuff out there, put it under a Creative Commons license so they can use it freely, and just they can have access to it. You know, if you don't like it, don't use it. If you do like it, use it. It's all good. Just, you know, I think the only thing with the Creative Commons license, they have to, you know, give me some credit in the notes or whatever that they use this track. That's really all it takes. And so they're all available for free. I started a page. It's www.mikegutterman.bandcamp.com. It's all on the Bandcamp site. And there's like four albums, three just solo guitar track albums, and one of my kind of ridiculous electronic music I made with my iPhone app called Groovebox, that you've probably heard a little bit of the electronic music in the last year or so. But I just put them all out there for anybody that wants to use for like productions or whatever. And I already had some of the fine folks in the community, like, I've got it up there where you can get it for free. Like, trust me, folks, don't feel the need to pay me anything for it. It's pay what you want for these tracks or whatever. So I'm not saying like you got to pay me anything. Honestly, just get them for free. But if you do want to donate, or if you want to, it's pay what you like, basically. And you can say zero and I won't be offended. You can just get them for free. But some people did pay me, and I just want to give a quick thanks to some people just in the last couple of days that have bought some of these albums from me. Dave Mahaly, the old camera guy, Mr. Dan Tree, Paul McKay from Analog Wonderland, and Mr. Jim Graves. So thanks, guys, for going above and beyond. You could have got the tracks for free. You kind of got ripped off there a little bit by paying for them, but I just wanted to give a thanks to those guys. So that's kind of what I've been up to. Hey, you know, let's get something, right? I mean, I released four albums.
Very cool.
and honestly, folks, don't download these thinking that I'm going to listen to these while I exercise or whatever. These are definitely like background music type tracks. It's meant to be like, you know, music for just help productions out or whatever. So like soundtrack kind of music, I guess, would be the a generic way to describe it. So I did that. So that's out there if anybody wants to check that out. So, OK, I think that's pretty much our weeks. And let's take us a break and get right to this roundtable episode. I'll get the Gray Lab timer warmed up and get it all ready and ready to buzz Andre. So that's going to be good. So we'll take a break and be right back, folks. Roundtable episode where we talk about the hot topics in all photography and film photography in particular, under the pressure of the Gray Lab timer, and see who gets buzzed in these topics. So let's go ahead and meet the panelists of this roundtable episode. I'm Mike Gutterman. I'm in Louisville, Kentucky. I'm drinking Miller Lite intermittently with a couple of sips of Evan Williams Kentucky Bourbon.
I'm Andre Dominguez in Los Angeles, California, and I am drinking some Grapefruit LaCroix.
I am Roxana Angles. I'm in Palm Desert, California, and I am drinking a giant icy glass of water.
I am Sam Warner. I'm in Dayton, Ohio, and I'm drinking Rabbit Hole Bourbon from Louisville, Kentucky.
Nice.
I'm Mike Padua in Benicia, California, and I'm drinking a piping hot cup of Major Dickinson's blend coffee from Peace.
All right. Well, there you have it. The roundtable cast, the cast of the members of this episode. So let's go ahead and dive into the topics. I'll go ahead and start off with my first topic for the roundtable. And I was having a conversation with Mr. Mike Williams one morning, and we got to talking about, I think he was talking about shooting with his Hoga or whatever, and how he just kind of blows through film in it and doesn't really think about it. And but when he puts film, and I agree with him, we were talking about this, but when I put, like, I'm same way. With my Hoga, I blow through some rows, or like a box camera, I blow through rows, like, don't really think much about it. Just, let's see if this comes out. But I put the same film, 120 film, in a Pentax 6.7. Or the Pentax 645N, and oh, I'm using this professional camera. And like suddenly, I don't know, I get a little more tense, and I start thinking things, oh, I got to make this, it's got to be perfect. Got to line this up, this composition's got to be perfect, and all this. It's a completely different mindset, even though the cost to me is exactly the same. The cost of the roll, the cost of developing, all of it is exactly the same between those two cameras, but the mindset of shooting a cheaper camera, such as a Hoga, or or compared to like doing the Pentax 6.7, where I feel like I got to get these stellar, pristine results. It's a completely different mindset, and I just wonder if you guys feel the same way, because I think for me that's one of the reasons I love Hogas, I love box cameras, I love all this, all these kind of crappy cameras, because it does free me up and give me that freedom to just kind of have more fun with photography. Not that like the strict side of like trying to make perfect photographs. Not that that's not fun, but it is more, it's a little more thought involved, a little more hard work, I guess, a little more brain power needs to be used. So I think why I like shooting a Hoga so much and stuff like that. So I just wonder how you guys feel about it. I'm gonna go ahead and start the Gray Lab timer, and we have 10 minutes to talk about this. What do you guys think?
I kind of agree. I find myself doing the same thing, and I don't know if it's just because on a Pentax 6.7, if there's more I can screw up than I can with a Hoga or a pinhole camera, or what it is. But I mean, you're right; it does cost the same. But I guess if the horizon's not exactly level on the Hoga, you just chalk it up to like a happy accident. It just kind of makes it look cool. But, when you're trying to get everything, tack shark focus and great composition, and, if it's not, horizon's not level, I mean, you're going to fix it in post, so you take the time, extra time, and you worry about it. So, yeah, I agree. I find myself doing the same thing.
Mm-hmm. Anyone else?
I think with the Hoga, there's a feeling of there's kind of less at stake. Like, you can't choose your shutter speed. You can't choose your aperture. You can't choose your lens. The picture is what the picture is. All you have is basically composition, and that's it. That's the only choice that you can make. And I guess the moment. But with more manual controls, there's for me personally, there's just a feeling of, okay, I have to get this right. If I'm going to choose a shutter speed, I want to make sure it's one that sufficiently stops the action. If I'm going to choose the aperture, it's one that gets everything in or out of focus as it needs to be. And, it's just a lot heavier, too.
there's that for sure. But do you think that part of it is, as you were talking, I kind of had a realization maybe that, if the shot doesn't come out great on a Hoga, I get to blame the camera. But if the shot doesn't come out good on the Pentax 6.7, I can't blame the camera. I have to blame myself, right? Like
that could be part of it. Yeah, I think you're on something there.
All right, Roxana, what do you think about it?
You know, I'm going to just bring in my whole psychology psychobabble stuff a little bit on it, because for me, I really just think it's like, you know, you have this preconception of just, you know, this is my fancy camera, this is my Hasselblad, like I need to, you know, get this right. And then exactly. and this is purely just for me. And then when I just throw in my whole good, like sits in my purse, it's just like, oh, here's a shot. Okay, quick. And you know, I do think that weight has something to do with it too, now that I was listening to that.
Does everybody throw away their lens caps to the Hoga? Please tell me everybody threw away.
Yeah. I don't know where mine is.
I'm ready to. I almost forgot and left it on last week, and I would have kicked myself. But
I've done that.
You guys know those are worth a ton of money, right?
The lens caps.
Some rare, old stock Hoga lens caps.
Well, they are now that people have heard that on this podcast.
we'll get Simon Forrester to start printing up Hoga lens caps. So there you go. There you go, Simon. There's a new business idea for you. But I'm going to need some royalties on that, though, I think, right? So, all right, Andre, you got plenty of time, man. This is getting wrapped. You got 6 minutes. I don't know what's going to happen.
Oh, perfect. I won't hog all of it, but it makes complete sense to me. And while you guys are talking in some cases about the psychology behind it, even if you look at it from like the kind of purely like non-emotional technical level, there's 10 shots on the Pentax 6.7 versus 12 in general on the Hoga. I mean, in general, anytime that I have more frames to shoot per camera, I tend to play a little bit more fast and loose. That's part of the reason why I've been having down my 36 exposure rolls for 35 millimeter, just to put myself more in that kind of mindset of shooting medium format where I have less frames, because I want to be a little bit more intentional with my 35. The weight issue is definitely, I think, part of it, but also the fact that the 6.7 is a interchangeable lens camera. Anytime that I have a camera that either has a fixed lens or that I only own one lens for it, because let's say it's expensive, like a Leica, that will cause me to...
Man, that 6 minutes went fast, didn't it?
I totally buy that.
Now go ahead, Andre.
Anytime that you have, you know, choices in terms of lenses, you're gonna, you know, be thinking about, oh, well, what if I got a wide angle shot of that? And if I get a wide angle shot, then I need to take something up close with a longer lens. If I put different lenses in my camera bag, I'll be tempted to use them and have that whole decision paralysis thing and overthink it way too much. Recently, I don't have a Hoga anymore. It's off to Mr. Mike Williams, who I believe when it arrived to him, the advanced lever popped off. And then Junior Wyatt said, well, Mike sends him expired film and Andre sends him a broken camera. but on my end, not having a Hoga anymore, I can absolutely see the difference between the Hasselblad with three different lenses that I'm borrowing from a friend versus my LCA 120. I just shoot completely differently. It's this kind of not 100% carefree attitude, but you know, it's a point and shoot. The camera's doing all the thinking for you. So as long as I'm, you know, being a tiny bit mindful of where the light is, it's going to get the job done. Versus the Hasselblad, thank goodness it doesn't have like a split image prism. Otherwise, I'd be driving myself crazy trying to kind of make everything perfectly line up. But it's just the more lenses, the more you have to deal with focus and making sure that you're metering correctly, even though the color negative film can absolutely take a beating in terms of exposure, the more you're going to be kind of overly precious about the photos that you shoot on it.
You know, I honestly don't think I needed to speed up the timer. I think we could have buzzed him. Yeah, that was a good speech there, Andre. Appreciate that. But
so you're welcome. See, Mike, you know, this is why you shouldn't buzz me prematurely. I'm gonna get there anyway.
Andre, are you saying you're typically premature on this situation?
Moving on to the next.
All right, let's move on to the next topic. Actually, it's Andre. It's you. What topic do you have for the roundtable tonight?
Cool. All right, let me pull up the screenshot that I took because I can't remember it. Okay, great. So the topic that I wanted to discuss is, you know, how much does the intended end product or form of presentation of the photo affect the way that you choose to shoot something? For me, if it's a vacation, a family trip, or the holidays, I'm now almost guaranteed to shoot that on a combination of slide film in 35mm and black and white in 120, because I specifically want to be able to create a, you know, like a curated slideshow in my Kodak Carousel slide projector, as well as make black and white darkroom prints, like nothing big, 4x6s, 5x7s, to share with the family or close friends that I took those photos of. And I see these days, you know, very little benefit to shooting color negative in those situations. So for you guys, when it comes to, you know, to deciding how you're going to shoot, whether that's the cameras you're using, the film stocks that you're going to be shooting, how much does that end product or the way that you're going to be presenting those images affect those decisions that you make?
Okay. Well, I can just say that actually, Andre, we had a conversation about this on one of our other late night phone conversations, which has been happening a little more regularly lately, which I quite enjoy. But I was ordering some. By the way, we have a Florida trip planned. We're actually going back to the Mexico Beach area this year. We actually found a place. So in August, we'll be going back there. So I'm going to shoot Super 8. Movie film down there again, like I did last year. So I bought two cartridges, and I was discussing with Andres, you know, should I get Ektachrome this time? But I realized I don't really have any plans to project Super 8, because I had to buy a projector, and that's a whole other thing to like worry about it working, all that stuff. I'm just happy getting the scans of the movie film and just getting the digital file of the movie films done that way. So, and Andre made a good point. He's like, well, don't get Ektachrome because the dynamic range is going to be so much, a lot less on the slide film. So I bought like two reels of the Kodak 50D because, you know, Super 8 is, it's not cheap. And I want that latitude. If I shoot like some stuff, you know, where my exposure is not, the camera doesn't expose quite properly, or I've got some backlighting or whatever, you don't want, when you're spending that kind of money to shoot 6 minutes of film footage on movie film, you kind of want that latitude. So that was a situation where I was definitely able to like choose a stock based on how I want the end product, which on that I'm just happy with a digital file. But as far as like regular photography, you know, I'm not a darkroom guy, at least not at this point in my life. And it's all about scanning and digital files and then printing on the HP photo printer. You know, it is the hottest trend, and inkjet printing is taking over the world by storm. I've shot a lot of slide film. I got 9 rolls that I've shot over the last year that still need to be developed. And I'm going to shoot a couple more, I think, in the next couple of months, particularly when I go back down to Florida. And I do want to do that. But like, I kind of wonder if slide film really is something I should be shooting, because I'm not going to project it. I have a projector, but I don't know if that's going to be part of my final presentation or not. I'm more about like photo albums. I like for my family photos to be printed out on paper and be in photo albums. So I kind of always just, kind of default to, I guess if I shoot slide film, it's for the look of it. It's not necessarily for the end product of how it's going to be seen or projected or whatever. So, I don't know. I'll let somebody else speak.
Well, I personally never think about what the end product is in terms of if it's going to be a print, or if it's going to be online, or if it's going to be projected. Maybe I should introduce that into my way of thinking, but I don't know if that's just going to introduce some choice paralysis into my whole workflow, if you want to call it that. You know, I just, I always just, you know, and I guess it took me some work to get to this point, but I always, you know, with whatever film I have, I try to put some thought into a film that I choose, you know, that's going to be in my camera for the next half a day or, you know, however long I plan to have that role in that camera or whatever. But I kind of, you know, once I make a choice, my mind goes into a mode of, you know, what I get is what I get. You know, if it's in black and white, I'm not going to go back and regret that I wish I'd shot that in color, in, you know, with negative or with slide or anything like that. Mm-hmm. If it was in color, I'm not going to wish I had it in black and white or whatever. So, you know, I just kind of have, and that took a little bit of work, you know, because I'm all about that choice paralysis. You know, when it comes up to all the choices that you can make with what camera and what lens, you know, I've kind of come to a way where I just shoot. Like if I choose a film and I'll just shoot it and I'll be good. I'll be free of that, choice paralysis.
I sort of feel like you may be kind of maybe thinking it somewhat the same way I do. I know Andre is looking like how he wants to have his final like presentation of the image, but right. I don't really think about that either. I think I choose film stocks based on the look that I want for those photos and, you know, the way that film stock's going to, is that kind of you choose film stocks for the look that film has for that particular thing you're wanting to shoot, not really thinking about the final presentation. Is that kind of where you're at? Cause I feel like that's where I'm at with it, but.
A little bit. A little bit, but not, mm-hmm. but also at the same time, not that much. Like if I know I'm going to be in a spot where I'm not going to have a lot of light, I'm not going to choose a slide film. You know what I mean?
Right.
But that's kind of, that's the extent of my decision-making process. It's like, mm-hmm. it's like a couple of seconds of thought and that's pretty much it. I've kind of just, and you know, there come times when I've regretted my choice, you know, when I think I'm going to go into a situation where I'm going to have a lot of light, but it turns out I don't. And I don't have a lot of light and I have a slow film. So, but, you know, kind of c'est la vie, I guess.
Well, at least it only takes you a few seconds. For me, I swear, it's like I have like 10 rolls of film in my bag, in my purse. And I'm like, do I want purple? Oh my gosh, but really, this would be red and black and white. And then I end up having like a few cameras in my bag. I am not thinking about the end product at all, and I should, but I don't. And I'm like, I have the worst time making decisions.
Roxanna, do you typically want to print your work, Roxanna? Is that do you see that as a final thing, or do you think you would ever do like a slide presentation, like get a slide projector and shoot slides and mount them and do a, because I do want to do that at some point. I think it's a fun thing, even if it's just torturous for my children. I think it would be fun to have a family slideshow. It is something I want to do. But do you ever feel you might do that, or is it just prints kind of like the final output for you?
Yeah, prints have been the final outcome. And honestly, I haven't shot a ton of slide film for slide film. Like I've cross processed it because I like, you know, how I like the strange and vibrant and colorful colors and the color shifts. So I haven't really shot a lot, and I want to. I guess I need to pick up a kit because I process everything myself. So I guess if I bought a kit, I might rethink that. I guess I just need to delve into that. I just haven't yet. And that's on my bucket list of things to do. So.
All right. Go ahead, Andre.
I was going to say, well, you know, Roxanne, I heard that this cool company just recently put out some interesting slide chemistry. You might want to take a look at that.
Yeah, I heard a little birdie told me about that. So, cool. You know, it planted the seed in my head. So.
All right, Sam, unfortunately, you have about a minute and a half, but we'll let you continue. But you might be the first person that's gotten buzzed since for a while other than Andre. So, making history tonight.
How did I let that happen?
You got to jump in, man. You can't. This is Andre's topic, so it was kind of hard to buzz him on this one. So, yeah. But
seriously, I'm kind of all over the place on this one. I'm that guy that brings like five cameras to a 2-hour photo walk. And, you know, usually most of them are black and white. You know, I am a darkroom guy and I kind of prefer black and white. So, you know, it kind of begs to ask the question, why do you need five cameras? But, you know, it's just probably because I couldn't carry 10. you know. But you know, as far as the output, I'm a print person. I probably don't ever see myself really projecting anything. And I do get in a dark room from time to time. And, you know, I was thinking about that today. It's like I scan almost everything. And I keep thinking, man, these will look so much better in print than they would on scan. And I need to get back to that. But no, I don't put as much forethought into it as I should.
Do you ever see yourself shooting slide film, or have you shot slide film?
You know, I've shot some, and I like it, but I kind of go back to just preferring black and white over color.
I totally said you. No, go ahead, Sam.
But no, I think I've shot more color film in the last maybe 6 months than I have my whole life. You know, just experimenting with it and starting to develop color film at home. But I still prefer black and white. There's just something about it.
Yeah, yeah. And Andre, you kind of feel the same way. Like your thought is, if you're going to shoot, I mean, I think where the subject actually came from is your thought is you want to shoot mostly color on slide film so you can project it, and black and white, so you can actually darkroom print it. Like isn't that the kind of the process?
Yeah. Right. And the overall kind of reasoning that I have behind a lot of this is that
it sounds like you just hate scanning. That's a
well, no. I mean, with the whole digital camera scanning stuff, I'm starting to hate it like less and less every day. I personally don't see myself, just given my past history and overall my feelings towards sitting down and printing stuff. My favorite format for printing at home is 4x6s. It's super easy to just, you know, stick them in a stiff cardboard mailer and mail them off to friends, or, you know, make photo albums like Mike was saying. So I value a lot the ability to, you know, make quick, easy, good-looking color prints with the HP Instant Ink program, which does a fantastic job for color with just like the standard HP photo paper. Like, without having to change anything, without having to test any other paper, I get great-looking results out of that. So,
by the way, folks, we are still not sponsored by HP. We're looking for it, but it hasn't happened yet.
But so, because of that, if I shoot anything that can be digitized in color, so whether that's color negative film or slide film, which, you know, is even easier to scan, quote unquote, whether you're using a flatbed or a digital camera, either of those two formats, I can make prints at home. You know, you can't do the whole Cibachrome thing for making prints with in the darkroom, in the color darkroom, with slide film anymore. You can technically still do RA4, but it's a little bit more difficult and you have to color balance. I'm already, you know, bad enough with color correcting my scans that I don't want to mess with any color darkroom printing. But because of the fact that the HP Instant Ink printer allows me to get 4x6 up to like pretty good quality 8x10s, whether I'm shooting color negative or slide film, like, that's already covered. It doesn't work that great, you know, with the papers, at least that I've tried in the past, with black and white. And if it is black and white, I want to print that in the darkroom anyway. So because I have those two, you know, options kind of covered already, then when I think about shooting something important, it does make me think more of like, okay, well, you know, if I want to project that, if it's I'm not going to be walking around doing kind of day-to-day photography on slide film. A, it's expensive. B, I'm not going to want to project everything. I'm going to want to project, you know, these kind of special moments. And so if I'm only shooting something that's kind of quote-unquote worthy of slide film and worthy of being projected, like, every few months, then those particular things I'll want to shoot on slide film. If I'm shooting something where I want to be able to kind of give something to someone, a print, there is something special about that being a darkroom print. And so I do kind of lean towards doing that on black and white. If I do shoot on color, I can give them an HP Instant Ink print for sure. That's totally fine. And there's going to be times that call for color over black and white. But when it comes down to the really meaningful stuff, the family stuff, unless there's a really compelling reason for me to shoot it on a color negative stock that gives me a look that's so drastically different than what I can achieve through any of the three first developer options with the CineStill CS6 kit for developing slides, then there's very little reason that I'll choose to shoot that with color negative versus and right there at the end of my rant.
All right. Well, let's move on. Good speech, Andre. I appreciate it. I had to make Sam feel a little better. He was the first person to get buzzed in a while. So, all right, let's move on to Roxana. What's your topic, Roxana?
All right. Well, my topic comes, I have lately, it seems like I follow such amazing photographers, artists, creatives in the field. And I feel like I'm seeing everything other than like the few, like, say, prints that I've either purchased or people like, or zines like the one I got from Sam, of course, or, the zine that you sent, Mike. I feel like I'm seeing everybody's work on the phone, and it's tiny. And I just feel like it doesn't give it justice. I feel like all the work that I'm seeing would just be so much cooler if it was larger or seen in person. And I guess my wondering is, does anybody, one, think about that? And number two, what do you do personally to, if you do think that way, what do you do to make sure that your own work isn't just dying on, like, say, Instagram? Because I feel like it dies after, you know how I feel about likes. Yeah. It's like a day. You have like your whatever likes, which is ridiculous, and your beautiful piece. And I think what also struck this is I started archiving all of my negatives from the last, it's been quite a project, but I've been rescanning some of my older ones because I had an older scanner that was crap before. And I'm like, wow, I love this. This is amazing. It died on Instagram. Damn it. So I don't know. I just want to know your guys' thoughts because it just seems like it's like our throwaway society. It's like, oh, buy it to throw it away and post it to toss it out. I just feel like our work is worth more than that.
Yeah, I agree. I think zines is I think all podcasts talk about zines so much, and so many people are doing zines. I feel like, to me, it seems like kind of the only option for us right now, right? Unless you do for your artsy fartsy stuff, unless you do like art shows or whatever, and like put your stuff out on display at an art show, or you get a gallery show. To actually physically show your work, it's not an easy thing, and not everybody wants to like do art shows or gallery shows, or even like, I've never done a gallery show. That's way above my pay grade, but not everybody wants to do that. So it is very difficult to find a way to like physically show your work in a way that really, in a format that actually gives it justice. And even sometimes I think zines, I've gotten some amazing ones in the last couple of years. I mean, just some unbelievable scenes, and they have way more impact than Instagram, seeing them on Instagram. Like, I've seen photos that I've seen from people on Instagram, and then they send me a zine and that photo's in the zine. I'm like, oh wow, that's so much better. I mean, I liked it on Instagram, but this looks so great on the scene, you know? And, but even zines typically they're typically a smaller format, so it's like, it's very hard to like, to display your work in, I think 8x10 is like kind of the standard, what I sell at like art shows. And that's getting to the point, even that it's not huge. But it's way huger than what we used to see on Instagram. But like, that's still considered a pretty small print at an art show. I mean, that's kind of like the standard smaller size print or whatever. And, but I think it makes an impact, but at the same time, I'm like, wow, like it's really difficult to like have our photography seen in a way that has the impact that I think the photo could actually have when it's a good one. So I don't know. What do you guys think about it?
Yeah, I think, you know, the zines have really changed how I look at it. You know, when this last zine I did was my first one, and even looking at my own work, you know, I've seen it on the computer screen or on my tablet, and it just wasn't the same as seeing it in print form. And it even made me kind of appreciate it more, and it's driven me to want to put out more zines, but also to start collecting zines. I mean, I've just got some really amazing zines in the last 6 months, and
there's been a bumper crop of good ones come out here recently. So
It's like some of the photos I've seen on Instagram, and like you said, Roxana, it is no comparison to what they look like in print or when you see them in a larger format.
What about Sam? Have you ever thought about doing an art show or a art fair or anything like that?
I thought about it, and to be honest, I just never really felt like I had a good collective body of work that would warrant it. But it's a goal of mine.
Just check my Instagram. You'll get all the confidence in the world. If I'm doing it, anybody can do it, man. Like I'm telling you.
Yeah, it's a goal of mine. And in fact, I've tried to start taking my my photography a little more seriously now. You know, trying to get more keepers, more photos that I would be proud to show people. And, you know, hopefully when COVID's over, that's something I can make happen.
Sure, sure. All right, Mike, what do you think?
Well, my favorite way to see a photo is in print. And I think like what you guys said with zines, I think that's a happy medium between a $60 photo book and a disposable Instagram post. You know, another thing, too, is it takes some work and someone to coordinate it. But print exchanges are a cool way to get your work into people's hands and to, you know, to kind of help spread that love. Cause then people can share what they got in print wise on social media, you know, and kind
that's
of everybody.
A, that's a good idea. It seemed like for a while that was kind of a big trend. Like there was a lot of print exchanges going on, and I haven't really followed it recently. I'm guessing there's still some going on. In other words, there was a print exchange group going on at one point on Facebook. And like, is that stuff still happening? It seems like it's kind of, it's been kind of quiet from what I've heard, but I haven't really been looking for it. You guys know of any print exchanges that's kind of constantly going on or anything? Is there anything that needs to be out there that has been kind of happening lately that I'm kind of out of the loop on?
You know, I don't know of any that are going on right this second. Mm-hmm. I know one pops up here and there. And, you know, when one pops up, a few tend to pop up because just it's kind of a cool, inspiring thing to do. But I don't know of any that are going on right now. Maybe we should start one.
There you go.
Yeah. I'm down.
I am, too. I love that idea. It's just like, just to reiterate, I feel like there's just so much talent, and you guys are right. It does take a little bit more work, and even to make a zine, it takes more effort and work. But I think that the payback is just so much larger. It's like you just get so much more out of it as an artist.
Yeah, I saw. I recently got a zine. I did a face cast on it. Bill Two sent me his first zine last week, and I'll talk about it more on the solo show next week. But you know, we've all seen Bill's Star Trails photos, and I've seen them only online. But then when I got in his zine, and there's a part of the scene where he has a couple of those photos in there, and just seeing them in print, I was like, oh my God, that print is breathtaking. Like in this zine, I mean, it was great online, but like seeing it in print on the zine was like, wow, that photo is amazing. Like, it was like breathtaking, you know? And so, this isn't a huge zine, you know, but it's way bigger than an Instagram post, you know? And, so yeah, it really kind of opened my eyes up to it. I need to, my problem with zines is I don't know how to use any of this software to make zines. So
that was going to be my piggyback question, though. And I know that would take it so much longer. But if you do make a zine, what do you even use? You know, I have a major deficit as well. I hand make mine because I'm so scared of it. So,
me too. I printed everything out on the HP printer and folded everything and stapled it myself. I couldn't figure out how to use any of that publishing software, but maybe we'll, that might be another good topic, but cause we're only leaving Andre. Andre, you got a minute and 10 seconds, brother. Andre.
Oh, did we lose him? He fell asleep.
Oh, damn it. I was on mute. My bad. And I lost some seconds. I will say, if you don't want to go all the way to creating a zine, if there's not necessarily like a concise, like coherent body of work, like get yourself an HP Instant Ink printer and just make a bunch of 4x6s. Like, again, I have
not,
so
not,
much
not sponsored
fun.
By, not sponsored again, by HP.
Yeah. Hashtag not sponsored. But, like, I have so much fun and am able to connect so much more with my own photography by making, like, cheap little 4x6s than a lot of times I ever do kind of combing through my own Instagram, which I never post to, or looking through the hard drive of scans that are disorganized, just flipping through 4x6s that I make when I'm scanning. I'm like, all right, I kind of like that photo. I'll print that out. And then you just end up with like a stack on your coffee, table in the living room. And once in a while, it's just fun to kind of flip through those and you know, have it in front of your face for more than 5 seconds. And that can start of making a zine, like putting them on the floor and physically rearranging them into themes. I think that if you're the kind of person that is a little bit intimidated by zine making at first, if you don't want to kind of shell out the money for like a Canon Pro printer that you're going to be getting the print heads clogged up, if you're not wanting to do an art show or a gallery show, pick yourself up an HP Instant Ink printer and make some damn 4x6s.
Well, you know, it's funny because, you know, I print 4x6s. Usually it'll be in like batches. I'll go a couple months where I don't print any. And then like, I was like, okay, let's print 4x6s of like the good stuff that I liked over the last several months or whatever. And when I print them out, I'm always like, you know, I grew up in the 90s where like I grew up a lot earlier than that actually, but 90s is my decade, but like when you went and got like, you know, drugstore prints and they gave you 4x6s, you know, 4x6 was like the small print size, whatever. But now it's weird that I think Instagram has changed my opinion of this a little bit. Cause like now when I print a 4x6 image out, on 4x6 photo paper or whatever, I'm like, you know, this print is, it's still impressive because I think we're still used to, we're so used to seeing these small little images on our phones, on Instagram. So even a 4x6 is impressive nowadays. Where back in the 90s, 4x6 was like, okay, if you like this, you're going to get an enlargement, you know. But like nowadays, 4x6 actually seems pretty, can actually have some impact now, which is very strange. I think it's the Instagram world we live in, right? But yeah. But okay, let's see who's up next. Sam. Sam, what is your topic for the round table?
All right. So my topic is what projects or plans has COVID altered, and what's the plan going forward? Like, are you going to reschedule? Are you going to cancel? Are you going to adapt? You know, what's the plan? And kind of what this came out of was, 2019, I became really interested in portraits for the first time. And so I thought, okay, 2020, I'm really wanting to concentrate on portraits, especially flash photography. And then, COVID happened and the whole social distancing thing, which pretty much nixed that. And, it kind of left me wondering, well, what now? So I moved on to some other projects, but I still want to do the portraits. And hopefully later this year, early next year, I'll be able to jump into that. But kind of wanted to get everybody else's thought on that.
Okay, well, when you mentioned this on the messenger thread when we were talking about our topics, I didn't realize this was going to hit home with me as much as it did, but I found out like just yesterday that I talk about a lot the big art show I do here in Louisville every October. Well, they just announced yesterday that it's canceled, so I have no art show this October.
Oh, man.
Already. Yeah, and so I'm kind of bummed about it. But honestly, with as lazy as I've been with photography, it kind of took a little bit of stress off me because this has not been my most productive year so far. But I kind of was kind of bummed because I knew that was going to give me a kick in the ass to like, oh, Mike, you gotta start taking some photos, man. The art show's coming, the big art show, you know. And now that's not there. Well, it's part of it is a relief. Part of it is also like, now I, you know, that motivation won't be there, like to kind of like, get some stuff done. But the other thing is we did schedule this Florida trip, which we didn't think we were going to do. And I don't know if you guys have been following the news, but Florida is a a cesspool of COVID right now. And so I'm worried because I think I need this Florida trip, not only just for vacation and just the recharge the battery thing that typically those vacations provide for me. But I kind of was like looking at it, like, look, if nothing else, this is going to kickstart my photography, because usually when I go to Florida, like last year, I brought 10 cameras and like two gigantic baggies of film. And I shot more film that week than I shot the entire year, basically. So like, I look forward to this trip to like shoot a lot and I use a lot of cameras I haven't got a chance to use in a while. And like, so I take too many cameras, too much film, and I just shoot. And like, Florida, start wearing your damn mask. Don't close down the beaches before we get down there. Like, come on, man. Like I need this. I need this to jumpstart my photography. So yeah, that's where I'm at with it. But yeah, it's kind of a bummer. No art show this year, but it actually makes me think, okay, so something that I was looking forward to is canceled. That gives me some time to think about how I want to approach, the next year when it's finally back. And there's that hope that, like, when it does come back, like, people will be even more excited about it. Oh, we missed it. We missed it so much last year that all this, it could be that next year when they have it again, there might be a whole lot of excitement, from buyers, just to be able to come out and look at art again. So I'm kind of thinking like it could be a huge year. So I need to really concentrate on that and make sure I've got some good stuff, because I think people are going to be excited to go out to this art show again, since it'll be canceled this year. Next year it could be gangbusters. So I guess that's my bright side of it. So, all right, who's up? Who else? What else we got?
I mean, kind of similar to Sam.
What are you doing?
I am asserting my place in this podcast. But similar to Sam, one of the things that I was really excited to do was, you know, incorporate flash photography into the photos that I take at both the watch events that I go to, as well as the beers and cameras meetups that I was planning to go to more often. And seeing as how neither of those are happening, I've kind of had to change gears a little bit. I've recently been doing a little bit more testing with film, with just some boring stuff here. But I kind of want to see if I can try to learn a little bit about shooting in a kind of controlled studio setup, both because I'm potentially interested in picking up a cheap digital camera to aid in some watch photography and some, like, you know, product photography stuff, as well as learn some of the flash stuff in a much less kind of hustle and bustle environment, where I can do more scientific tests, you know, write down what it is that I'm doing as I'm doing it, so that I don't have to wait until there's another event in 2 weeks for me to try to fix the mistakes that I made at the previous event.
So what about your had a project that you wanted to start doing, like car photography. Like, I guess that's been obviously been put on hold for that, right?
A little bit. I think that there probably are still some of the car meetups happening, given that it's inherently an outside activity. And I'm not abandoning that. I just haven't really done any research for it in the past, I'd say, month and a half, couple months. So it's still somewhat on the radar, but, you know, maybe I might be moving on some of this other stuff before I move on the car stuff.
Sure. All right, Mike, what do you got? I'm gonna let the guests go. Roxanne, and you might get buzzed on this one.
I might get buzzed. So, well, don't yell at me if I scream. That thing freaks me out. So
we've heard you scream before on the horror movie. So yeah.
Well, as far as plans go, I mean, yes and no. Like, we're a pretty active family. I have two little kids, and we try to keep them out and about as much as possible, with even, you know, little day trips or even little overnight trips. And those are those are my opportunities to photograph new places and my family kind of at the same time, you know? But also, being stuck at home, you know, I still have my favorite subjects, which are my two little kids and my wife, you know? So I'm kind of lucky in that regard. You know, kind of having to be a little bit more creative with the scenery that I see every day, you know, and just trying to catch different ways the light hits at different times of day, and just paying a little bit more attention to that, since we're kind of doing the whole shelter in place thing. But I guess a whole lot of yes, a lot of plans have changed, but I still have my favorite subjects.
And I'm guessing, you know, with Shoot Film Co. being that you're kind of a one-man operation, it's pretty easy to social distance yourself from yourself, I'm guessing. So, right?
Yeah. I mean, you know, work is work and business. That's still all a one-man thing, you know. So, yeah. Like I go to the office and I pretty much don't see another human being all day, which is a little isolating. But, you know, that's just kind of how it works nowadays anyway.
Well, I mean, some of the coworkers I worked with back when I worked an office job before I got in the factory, or even at the factory, there's some coworkers I don't mind social distancing with those people whatsoever. So.
Yeah, I bet.
All right, so Roxanna, what do you got?
Well, you know, I'm
just to let you know, you got about a minute 30, so you got a little time.
All right. So, kind of like Mike, my favorite thing is my family. I think the only thing that now is my new challenge is nobody wants me to share any of their photos on any platform because they are all very private little humans. So now I'm not allowed to share any of my personal private family life. Even my 8-year-old's like, "You're not posting that, right?" I'm like, "No, I'm not." Okay. But I have adapted some because I have pushed myself to do the virtual shoots that I've been doing also. And that's been really weird. And at first, I mean, it's weird and cool all wrapped up into one. Because, like, I've shot my sister, my good friend Chelsea. I just finished with Suzanne, and then she flipped it on me and shot me. And it's so bizarre shooting your computer screen while the other person has their phone and is placing it, and you have to have really good Wi-Fi. And but then the pictures come out kind of cool and weird, and you know, there's like a texture to it,
like a lo-fi kind of look.
So as long as you don't, I love that stuff, so I don't mind it at all. But you know, so it's been fun. That freaks me out. God.
Well, you can blame Andre. Andre jumped the gun and tried to he cut line.
Thanks, man. Andre.
I'm being sneaky this episode.
he cut line, man. No one likes a line jumper, man. All right. Well, that's kind of the first four topics we wanted to get out on this round table episode. And we got a topic coming from Mike Padua in the next segment, and probably a couple more that we're going to throw out there just for shits and giggles. So let's take us a break, and we'll be right back, folks. All right, folks, we're back for the final segment of the round table discussion. Hot topics, just super flaming hot. And so we're going to get to Mike Padua's subject for this round table discussion. Mike, what do you got for us?
Well, I got some really exciting news. Well, I didn't get the news, but it's news that I saw of a photographer who I've been following for many, many, many years. His name is Khaliq Allah, and he shoots a lot of street portraits in New York. well, kind of all over the world now, but he's based in New York. Shoots really beautiful work, shoots really low ISO color film in really dark, high contrast scenes, just really beautiful portraits in the streets of New York. And I saw the news today that he recently became a member of Magnum. And Magnum is a really prestigious photo agency. I'm not the biggest Magnum fan. I don't think there's a lot of members of this photo agency that I'm not a big fan of. But the reason I'm excited for him is because I've been his fan for a really long time. And also, with this membership in this agency, it just kind of gives him a big platform and a big voice. So, I'm not sure what, like, if we can kind of expand on that topic or not. And, but, yeah, that's what I was excited about today. I got, like, I saw it and I was just super happy for this guy because I was a big fan. And kind of a side note, I came to discover him because I was many years ago, like, this is probably a decade ago, I was looking for information on the Contax T2. And a YouTube video of him popped up talking about his cameras. And that's how I discovered this guy's work. So just I've been following this guy for a long time and just kind of seeing him being a member of this photo agency was really exciting news for me.
It's almost like when you start liking some underground like rock band and you see them in this club with 10 people and then they blow up and you're like, oh, wow, good on them. Like, it's kind of like we're watching one of your favorite underground bands blow up. But then some people like turn against and music. Some people just turn against them, though, because they're selling out. They're selling out.
But, yeah, that you know what? That's a really good example. That's a really good example of just, really. Something that really touches you early on and like that's a great example is seeing them in a club with 10 people and going, dude, that band is awesome. And then,
right,
you know, 5-10 years later, you're seeing them, you know, just being really successful. But like, I was just super happy for him. And I was that's kind of the news that excited me today, you know, because he just such a fan of his photography.
That's awesome. So now, I've obviously heard of Magnum and stuff and all that, but like, now, is there a lot of people that shoot film that are actually like in that organization, or is it like is this an anomaly that like they have a guy that primarily shoots film invited to join that platform?
No, there's actually a lot of people that shoot film. And it's not, you know, they don't really have any hard fast rules about what people shoot as long as they're producing work. But if you go through a lot of their Instagram profiles or their portfolios on their website, you'll see that they're, you know, a lot of them do shoot a lot of film. And, you know, I think a lot of that comes from just kind of some traditionalism. A lot of the members are older, you know, they really range from in age from, you know, people in their got like Martin Parr got what's he in his 70s? Right now and people on down who are much younger in their 20s. So there's the film is definitely not an anomaly in that group.
Okay. And like, so now that he has this this sort of a platform to like shout from the mountaintops from, like, how will it, like, for people that don't know, like, and I'm a little bit like out of the loop on what actually Magnum does for people, like, well, how will this help him?
Well, it's really just a big platform for him. Mm-hmm. You know, it's probably one of the, if not the most prestigious photo agency. So basically they're an agency,
right.
They exist to promote your work. They are notoriously difficult to become a member of this agency. The people who do, they go through a really rigorous membership process. You become a nominee and then you get a full member will mentor you for 2 years and then you become an associate. And then you work another 2 years before you become a full member. So you basically, you know, becoming a member is just the beginning of your membership. You have to work for another 4 years before you become a full member. So it's just a huge agency with a big voice and just a really big platform.
So it's kind of like, it'd be like my band getting signed to Sub Pop or something like that. So it'd be a big deal for me.
Exactly. So, yeah. That's right. I mean, it is definitely like the major label. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's like, it's a prestigious
thing. It's a major label, but it's still cool. Like, unlike maybe like Sony Music or something like that, right?
Yeah, exactly. I think Sub Pop's the good example. Yeah.
Right. All right. So what, anybody else have some thoughts?
No, I think it's great. I think there's a lot of photographers out there that probably don't get the recognition that they deserve, and it's fantastic that he's getting his. Mm-hmm.
You know, something that I think came up one of, I think probably our last episode, but it's so cool to also like have that empowering vibe, and I love that. In this sort of community, you can follow somebody and watch them grow and truly feel authentically happy for them. And that's what kind of gives me goosebumps right now. It's just like, and that's something that I've always loved about this community. And we have a special little thing because I talk to Brian all the time about this, and it's just not the same in other platforms.
No, it really isn't.
Do you think if this now, like, we're talking about this here on a film photography podcast about this guy getting accepted to a Magnum or whatever, and do you think that if I don't know, I'm not trying to play the digital versus film game or whatever, but like, you think of a regular photography podcast that talks about like mostly digital photography, if some digital guy got accepted to Magnum, do you think they would talk about it? Like, you think, would it be a big deal to them? I don't know. Just throwing that out there.
I mean, I don't know, but I know that when I talk to Brian about like in the directing or in the whole realm of making movies and playwrights, that there's a lot of competitiveness more and more jealousy and ill will than anything else. And I think that that's something that's always frustrated him. And that's, so judging just by what he tells me on his side, I don't know. I don't know. What are your guys' thoughts?
Well, it reminds me in the 90s, there was an article, I think, I don't know if it was like some major magazine or whatever, came out when Seattle blew up, when the music scene in Seattle blew up in the 90s. There's some article from a prestigious magazine. I don't know if it was Rolling Stone. I don't know who it was. Not that Rolling Stone's a piece of shit now, but it was some good magazine. It was saying that Louisville, Kentucky was going to be the next Seattle. And we did. We had a great music scene in this town. But there was so much backbiting in this scene, and like the bands just had so much, like, they never really came together and supported each other in a way that would make the scene grow and allow this town to possibly be the next Seattle music scene or whatever, because there was this weird like jealousy thing going on between so many of the bands that from talking to a lot of people that are in that scene, I just hear that same story time and time again. Now I'm hoping that this guy, he's not going to get that. Like, I don't feel like he'll have that sort of, now that he's sort of somewhat made it, right? He probably won't have to deal with that, I'm hoping.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's a tough question. That's a mm-hmm. great question, but you know, who knows? Like, there are, the agency itself, they're, I guess, notoriously competitive with one another. So I think uh-huh. he faces a whole new set of challenges in terms of, like just kind of being in the agency. From what I understand, getting into the agency is hard, and being in the agency is even harder. Again, not to fetishize this thing, because I'm not a Magnum fanboy by any means.
Right.
It's just like, what I really appreciated about it is just the recognition he has received and to have come this far,
It's nice to see artists that you enjoy, that inspire you to finally get their due, right? Yeah.
Yeah. It was so cool to hear the news and see him succeed, and like, I just really hope to see him succeed more, selfishly, because I know now he's going to have a lot of resources to produce more work. So it's like, I'm happy for myself, you know, because I'm going to see more books and more projects from him. So.
Awesome. Andre, what do you got for this subject?
You know, congratulations to him. I actually really do want to, you know, dive in and check out his work, but yeah, just another person for you guys to check out. So thank you for sharing, Mike.
Yeah, thank you.
Man. And Andre, man, oh God, I thought I was going to get him, man. There's like 20 seconds left. I'm just going to.
There you go. I've been very careful this episode. I'm actually quite proud of myself.
I'm not. I don't like it. I don't like this new turn. Like, we're gonna have to find a way to fool Andre. Like, well, first of all, we need to get him drinking again on these shows. That's how we get him. But
I'm saving my bottle of Larceny that I just bought for Big Bear this weekend, because apparently California's like open container laws. Like, you can have a bottle in the back seat that you have no access to. And that is still a violation. So,
all right. So let's move on to Roxana. You had another subject you wanted to throw out here on this.
I did. And it's almost like a continuing part, just because, you know, how curious I am about the whole zine and the making it. And I want to know, like, you know, if you've made a zine, like you talked about it, Mike, how you've done it. But if you've made a zine, who do you use? And also, kind of to piggyback on that, if you're developing yourself and scanning yourself, how big are your photographs that you're scanning? Like, if anybody can share that, it would be so awesome, because it would be helpful.
Yeah. My first zine, I did all myself, using a program. It's like, what is it called? It's like, one of those free, open source, all in one sort of, like, I don't know. It's like the open source version of like Microsoft Word or whatever. LibreOffice, I think is what it's called. Is that it? Something like that. Anyway, that's how I made my first zine. And that's because I had no capability of using any software. What's the one that everyone uses? That's a Adobe product. What is that one called?
InDesign.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't have Adobe subscription. I don't have access to all this stuff. So I had to find ways around that. And granted, probably that's the way to do it. I'm not going to pay a subscription for software. I just can't do that. But I will say, as far as like scanning resolution, what I've been doing is my thing with scanning is, I want to if I'm going to take the time to scan, I'm going to go ahead and scan it at a high enough resolution that I can at least get 8x10s for like art shows, or maybe up to 11x14. So I've always scanned at 3,200 DPI on my Epson scanner. Now, granted, it's probably not optically putting that out, but I was just like set it at that. I've always done that. But I realized recently, I can save myself some time. Like 35 millimeter, I still do it 3,200 DPI because I need to get as much out of that little small frame as I can for 8x10s or 11x14s. But I've realized, like, for medium format, I've dropped down to like 2,400 DPI, and it's still way plenty of resolution for any size print I'm going to make. So that's what I've been doing with scanning, is 3,200 DPI for 35 millimeter, and I've dropped down to, I think it's 2,400 or 2,800, whatever the next selection down is for medium format, because the negative is so big that I don't need a 3,200 DPI scan of that. So, and it saved me a little time scanning 120 negatives. So that's kind of my process. What's anybody else got?
So I want to get a little nerdy here about DPIs. Is one, I think because I worked in the print industry for 8 years total. Yeah, almost 8 years total. So I worked in print shops. But anyway, so I like Mike's advice of scanning at those DPIs. If you want to scan a little smaller, here's your rule of thumb. You want to scan at 300 DPI at your print size. And here's what that means. Let's say you are going to print and this is just an example, a 4-inch by 6-inch picture in a zine. Mm-hmm. So it's your picture has to be, your digital file has to be 1200 pixels by 1800 pixels. So in other words, on the 6-inch side, it's basically 300 dots times 6 inches. So that's 1800 pixels.
Okay.
Times the 4-inch side at 300, again, 300 dots per inch at 4 inches. That's 1200 pixels. So that's really all you need for it to look sharp in print form is 300 DPI.
You know, however, what? I've read so many articles about this, Mike, and this is the first time that any of that ever made sense. Yeah. You really nailed it there, man. Yeah. Okay.
I asked the right question.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. It's confusing. And the only reason I know this is because I worked in print shops for so many years and I've seen every, you know, people have scanned 300 DPI at 1 inch. And then they come in looking for a, you know, an 8x10, and it's just not enough information there. So, right. You know, it's like, well, I scanned at 300 DPI, but your output was at 1 inch. So it's just kind of not enough, you know, so it's got to be based on your final print output.
Okay. Yeah. I just feel like I always scan large enough to where I can easily make 8x10s to 11x14s. Even if sometimes 11x14 gets into a little bit less than 300 DPI, I think you can get by you can probably get by in the 200 range and still look okay. Is that right? Because I've kind of noticed that. I've had some files that I've scanned that, like, by the time I blow it up to the print size I want, it ends up being like 240 or something, and it still looks fine. But
and you know what? You definitely have leeway there. It's going to be fine. You know, scanning at a higher resolution is okay. It's like, it's kind of the safe way. It's the safe way to go, you know, because you have more information that you need. And most of the time you're going to be saving to a PDF anyway. So, so by the time you give that PDF to a printer or whoever it is, that's going to print your zine or your 8x10 or your print or anything, you know, they're just going to have a look like the properly formatted PDF anyway. But like, as long as you remember that 300 DPI at the actual print size formula, then you're going to be good. Your prints are going to work fine. And if it's a little less than that, no big deal.
So you take 300 times the amount of inches per the side, right? Like 300 times six, if you're doing a 4x6. Okay.
Right.
Okay.
Exactly. Yep. That's exactly right.
That's strangely, like, you should teach, Mike. You should have a class, because I've read so many articles about scanning resolution, and that actually made sense for the first time ever. So, good job. You get a gold star on this podcast.
All right. Yeah, that's what I wanted.
All right. So, Sam, what do you got?
You know, normally I just scan at 1200 DPI, no rhyme or reason. It felt like it gave me, a decent looking image if I printed it. And, I think that's what I did for most of my zine. It was an 8x8 zine. The images, in it were probably at the biggest 4x6. So I think I might've just gotten lucky, but it turned out pretty good. But there were a few photos, medium format, that I did scan higher because I knew I wanted to print like a 16x20 print of it.
Yeah. Yeah. So and are you doing a flatbed scanner, Sam?
Yeah, I've got an Epson V550.
Okay. Okay.
You know, definitely need to upgrade, at some point, whether I go with the digital, camera scanning route or, you know, maybe try to get an Epson V850, but, right now it's hanging in there, so that's what I'm using.
Yeah, I'm lucky to own a V800, but I will say, if it ever dies, I'm not paying that money for another one. It's great. I love it. But it was really painful to buy back then. And you know what? They haven't gotten any cheaper.
They really haven't.
No, they probably haven't manufactured these things in like 3 years. They just probably have like a warehouse, like 100,000 of these sitting somewhere. But I don't know. Maybe they still may. I kind of doubt that the factory is turning out V800s every single day. But yeah. Well, and
there you go with your theories, Mike. We're going to start getting emails from people.
Remember the last time you did this, there's one guy putting them together.
Well, there's a freezer somewhere with like 100,000 V800 sitting in a freezer somewhere. So, but
yeah, it'd be, or else they'll expire.
But I will say, I'm not a I don't mind scanning. So like I'm not ready to jump on the digital scanning bandwagon, but when this thing dies, because I'm perfectly happy with this V800, but when it dies, that's probably what I'm going to do. I'll move to digital camera scanning, I believe. So, but yeah. All right, Andre, where are you at?
I think I don't know any of the technical stuff when it comes to making zines, but I still do stand by the fact that, you know, even if, let's say you didn't scan the images originally at a resolution high enough to kind of just jump in right away and get to making the zine, if you've got, you know, low res scans from a lab, just make some 4x6 prints with them, whether it's taking them to a drugstore or using your HP Instant Ink printer, lay them all out on the floor.
Paid, man. Like I'm tired of this. Like it's some money.
It's just coming up naturally. It's very, very applicable. But yeah, I'm personally of the mindset of when I go and, you know, scan, especially 35mm, that first go where I'm just wanting to kind of see what's on the film. I have no idea what the keeper rate is going to be. I have no idea if things were in focus or if I like the composition. I generally tend to scan at a much lower resolution on the first pass. And then once I kind of find my keepers, the things that I actually want to do something with, I'm more than happy to go
back. Yes! Yes!
I'm more than happy to go back and then rescan those frames that I want to do something with at a higher resolution. It saves me time. It saves me hard drive space, especially when there's only going to be a few photos that I'm like, wow, those are really good. Those deserve to be a high-res file.
Oh, you know what? There is one thing I want to add. There's software called Scribus, and it's free. It's open source desktop publishing layout software, kind of like InDesign. Or not kind of like
InDesign. Really?
Like InDesign. Yeah, it's called Scribus.
Okay, spell this out for me, because I'm writing this down. But
It's a Scribus. Scribus. Ah,
there we go.
Now, is it easier than InDesign?
No, it is not easier than InDesign. Okay. However, it's not quite as fully featured as InDesign, but it's, for being free, it's pretty damn good.
So, okay.
Nice. Cool. Very cool. All right. And I think we have one last hot topic to get to before we wrap up the show. And that comes from Mr. Mike Padua again. So, Mike, what do you got for us to bring it home? I think at one time you said you didn't want to be the headliner, but now you've become the headliner of the show. And bring it home, man. We're rooting for the encore. You know, everybody's been stomping their feet and lighting their lighters for the last 5 minutes waiting for this. And like, you know, so let's see what you got. We close it out, man. No pressure.
Well, now, I mean, the expectations are too high. I'm going to fizzle out here. I just want to, you know, this was kind of like a dovetail on my original topic, was that I just kind of wanted to hear from people about photographers or artists that have inspired them lately. So I kind of already talked about Khalik Allah, who has inspired me and I've been a fan of for a long time. So I wanted to hear who's been inspiring you guys.
I'll start off.
This is a topic that Andre and I always like. I don't think we like duck under a table at this point because I have a hard time like throwing out names. But all right, Sam, go ahead.
Well, screw you, Mr. Buzzer. I have one.
Well, speaking I've of got buzzer, two.
I forgot to start the timer. Oh, hold on. Oh, here we go. There we go. We're good.
Well, I've got two. One guy I was lucky enough to get him to agree to interview for my photography blog. And he's got a YouTube channel, a great Instagram. He's very helpful with answering any questions. And his name is Adrian. I think you pronounce his last name Villa. It's Villa. But on Instagram, he goes by AOWS. And I think if you just search YouTube for AOWS, you'll find him there also. But he's a mix of digital and film. But he does some great film work and has some great YouTube channels. And then the other person who's just really is just, the photography's been blowing me away lately is one of a member of our Negative Positives Facebook group. But Jamie Marcellus, I mean, I think some of the stuff that he's been putting out lately, he just knocks it out of the park. You know, he's just got a really unique look with his film photography that I really admire.
Awesome. Awesome. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. I'm going to have everybody. I might get buzzed on this one because I got to think about this, but all right, Roxanna, what do you got?
I ran into an artist, and she's also a photographer, but it does a lot of different stuff. And, her name is Ellie Pritz, and her stuff is just so colorful and beautiful. I was going through her Instagram, and I can tell that it's like a hybrid, but she's like done film soup way in the past, but I believe she even got named like one of Time's magazine's like newest artists, but she's done some amazing work, and it's just so inspirational. I was just blown away by it. It's definitely one to check out.
Awesome. And Andre, I know you're chomping at the bit.
I was. You know, So the person I'd like to talk about. He's a guy named Kevin Terrell. I hope I'm pronouncing that right. And he was introduced to both me and Mike by a friend of the show, Mr. Bill Manning, who is one of the hosts of the Studio C4, well, 1 Hour Photo podcast by Studio C41.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes. So his his Instagram handle is Kevin Likes Whiskey. And so what this guy does is he takes these amazing, extremely creative, like product photography and like editorial product photography shots of whiskey, both in studio as well as, you know, out in out of studio, I guess. He's got
environmental
product photography. Yeah. So he's got some shots where, you know, there's a bottle of whiskey like in this kind of stream, this babbling brook with this Mamiya. And this is all shot on film on a Mamiya RZ67. And he's got the RZ67 on the tripod kind of mounted upside down so that it's like just a few inches above the water. And his photography is just absolutely amazing. He also has a website where he does reviews of all of these whiskeys that he's taking photos of, and he just recently came out with another Instagram account that I believe is called Terrell Photographics, and I'll give all this info so Mike can put it in the show notes, where he's showing through his Instagram stories kind of behind the scenes of how he sets up and lights all of these different shots. Now, I'm not sure how much product photography is interesting to other people, but I've recently found it extremely fascinating because you can spend so much time, like, you know, manipulating the light and bending the light with reflectors and foam core boards and aluminum foil. And if you're shooting digital, you then also kind of going through all the steps to, you know, edit the digital file. I'm not sure he does a little bit of that as well. I mean, once we get scans back, a lot of us do things like dust removal, color correction, etc., especially if you're shooting color negative film. But it's just amazing how much work he puts in, like as he's shooting it, in order to get it as right in camera as possible since he's shooting it on film. So if you're a fan of whiskey, if you're a fan of cool product photography and a fan of like interesting behind the scenes of how to shoot film in studio and on location, definitely go give him a look.
Or if you're a fan of Mamma Mia cameras, right? So I didn't want to interrupt you, but I had to throw that out there because you mentioned Mamiya. I have to throw it out there. But
I'm checking out his work right now. It looks fantastic.
Mm-hmm. And that's a tough field, like to actually make like artistic sort of shots out of what's basically product photography. Like that's a difficult thing to do, right? Like to actually have an inspiring product photography shot in a way. Like, yeah, I think that's a really hard line to toe.
Oh, for sure. And it's something that like I would like to, you know, I don't want to do that for a living. I don't want to take pictures for a living, you know, period. But it's something that I would like to gain as a skill, to be able to once in a while, you know, maybe with the aid of trying out a lot of that stuff on digital first, to be able to do that kind of work once in a while would be really cool.
Well, I can see, Andre, like you take some boxes of CineStill film out to a babbling brook and like the boxes are going to get wet really quick. It's probably not going to work out very well, right? Like shooting film.
Well, I mean, even for you, Mike, I think that like, you know, one of your best-selling shots is of that old Forrester sign. Some really cool, you know, photos of classic Louisville bourbons shot on film would probably be great sellers.
You're right. You're probably right. That's I should write that down because it looks like I have a little over, I got like a year and a half now until I have another art show. So I got time to prepare for that.
Yeah. And I really want to get Kevin on the podcast because I have so many questions about, you know, the experience of shooting that kind of stuff on film and any tips that he can offer. I think it'd be a really fun conversation.
So he's in the hot seat. He heard it here first. So, and Andre has left me with a minute and 20 seconds. And, that's probably all I need because, we talked about this a little bit in the break. Like I have a thing where like, you know, I try to follow anybody that listens to this podcast, on Instagram. Like if I'm not following you on Instagram, it's not because I'm an asshole and I don't like your photography. I just need like, hey, if you guys listen to the show and I'm not following you, hit me up and I'll give you a follow. Cause I always try to like, I want to see photography of people that listen to this podcast or people that are in our community. That's the photography I want to see. And like, so that's basically really the only photography I look at now. Like, I mean, I could say like when I first started, got into photography, I bought a lot of photo books and I could say, yeah, I was, oh man, yeah, Edward Weston and Ansel Adams and, Wynne Bullock is somebody I've always thrown out there as like one of my favorite photographers. And like, but honestly, like, yeah, I'm inspired by them, but my photography is nowhere near theirs and probably is completely different than theirs. But like most of my inspiration comes from seeing what our peers and the community shoot. And honestly, I could throw out a ton of names and I don't want to throw out any names because then I would be like, hey, why didn't you mention my name? You mentioned this guy. Like, so I'm in a weird conundrum with that. Like I just, most of my inspiration comes from the people that listen to the show and I follow on Instagram. And here it goes. Yeah, got me. I think is this the first time I've been buzzed? It's possible, but yeah, that's. And I was talking about this during the break. I was like, I think one of the problems I have with like Instagram is I go through my feed and I see photos I like and I like it and it might resonate with me. It's like, man, it's a great shot. And I might look at the account that did it and I'm like, man, that guy really nailed it here. And like 5 minutes later, as I'm scrolling through my feed, I've already forgotten that account, you know, whatever that because that's just the thing about Instagram, like. Because I think it's where I digest most of my photography that I look at nowadays. And there's something about it, like, it's hard to put the name with accounts. And that's actually one of the reasons I first asked Roxana to be on the show as a guest early on was, like, her account was one of the first accounts that when I saw the photo, I knew, oh, this is Roxana Log, I guarantee it. And then, sure enough, it would be. Like, hers was one of the first accounts that, like, would... Like once I saw the photo, I didn't have to look at the name. I knew it was one of her shots. And so like, that's why we originally had her on and look where she's become now, like a celebrity. Oh. Like
and now you're making me blush. That's so nice. That's a huge compliment.
Well, it is because I just feel like, you know, I feel like when you look through Instagram, like I see a lot of great photos and like, a lot resonates with me, but it's very rare that I put the photo with the photographer as much as I should. So when I do get to that point where like, oh yeah, I like this photo and I feel like I've liked a lot of these photos, and I see the account and I'm like, I've liked a lot of photos in this account. And like, Roxana was one of the first, people that resonated with me like that. So that's kind of the way I digest photography now. And it's just, it's maybe not the best way, because I really can't say that. Honestly, at the end of the day, do you guys feel like people that you like, photographers that you like, that you enjoy, that inspire you, do you feel like when you go out and shoot that actually changes the way you shoot or inspires you to shoot in a different way? Or do you feel like you just kind of do your own thing? You can appreciate their work. It inspires you, but do you think it actually changes the way you shoot? Because I'm not sure that I go out with the thought of the inspiration I get from looking at photos. I feel like I just go out and they're like, let's see what I find. Like, I don't know. Where are you guys with that?
Yeah, I'm kind of the same way. I go out and see what I can find. I always go out with maybe the intention of trying to replicate or emulate some photographers that I admire. But I'm seldom successful at it. You know, I usually end up just coming home shooting with, you know, whatever I just happen to come across.
Right. I usually just come home with a bunch of fire escape photos and vintage signs. So that's
I think, well, I'm attracted to like
style right there.
What's that? What was that?
Just saying that's the Mike Gutterman style right there.
Well, I by no means have a trademark on that. Plenty of people do it better than I do, but I just like to make a good joke out of it. But so anybody else, what's your thoughts on like taking your inspirations out on the field when you're out shooting?
You know, I think what I'm attracted to mostly is color. It's like, I think I get attracted to different palettes of color, and then I try and do my own thing, just kind of being inspired, because it's, you know, you still kind of want to, I don't know, I like just doing whatever.
yeah Mike, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I do, you know, like I think either consciously or subconsciously I do kind of, you know, my inspirations, I'll take them with me. They'll inspire me to look at things in a certain way, to kind of look at certain patterns of light, look at certain colors or whatever. So yeah. But not always. Like, I don't go out trying to replicate things as much, but I do go out, you know, I'll consciously look for a pattern, or I'll consciously look for, you know, the way a light is hitting a subject or an angle, you know, like a certain angle or something. So yeah, definitely.
I kind of think that like most of our influences, whether it be in any of our passions, like I've noticed it with me, with music or photography, like they're not necessarily there. I'm not necessarily trying to replicate them, because most of the time I don't have the ability to replicate them. I'm not as good as the people that inspired me. Right. But I think it's like back there in the back of your mind, it is subliminally like maybe influencing you, and you don't necessarily know it. You're not necessarily trying to make it happen, but it does come out in like little sparks come out from that. But yeah. It seems to be the way influences seem to work with me. But yeah. Andre, what do you got?
I feel like, I mean, I really don't spend enough time looking at photography to I think kind of absorb a lot of the things that I like about the film photographers that I do like. And increasingly these days, what I'm shooting is just, you know, random pictures of friends and family. So, and that's not really the type of photography that I follow people for. And so I don't really see it influencing a lot of my kind of day-to-day photography, unless I'm working on like some kind of specific project, which I haven't in a while. So it may be that in the future, they'll have more of an influence on how I shoot. But for right now, during quarantine, Not particularly.
All right, so I think we've set the world ablaze with these hot topics, right? And it just lit a fire under everyone with this roundtable episode. And I want to thank Mr. Sam Warner and Mr. Mike Padua for joining us on this episode. Thanks, guys. It's been a real blast, and thanks for bringing your perspectives. And and sorry to Sam for getting buzzed. That wasn't supposed to happen. It's supposed to be Andre, but yeah. But there you go.
No problem at all. Happy to help you out there, Andre.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you for having me, man. It's always fun to talk to you guys.
Always a blast. Well, let's go ahead and get our socials out there and wrap the show up. And let's start off with Sam. Sam, where can people check you out? Your website and all your socials. Let the people know where to get their all the Sam that they want.
Well, you can find me on Instagram as the Unrecovering Photography Addict, and also the website, the Unrecovering Photography Addict. Pretty much that's where everything is.
Awesome. And Mr. Mike Padua, everyone knows him from Shoot Film Co. We all own stuff from him, right? Hey, buy some more stuff from him. So he's getting ready to move offices. He wants to move less stuff from one office to the other, right? So there you go, Mike. Where can people check you out?
Yeah, that's right. Somebody come by this this giant desk that I don't want to move. No, you can find me at The Mike Padua, TheMikePadua on Instagram, and at Mike Padua on Twitter.
And your website obviously is
shootfilmco.com.
There you go. And Roxana, where can people check you out?
People can find me on Instagram at RoxanaLog.
And Andre.
You can find me on Instagram at AndreOnFilm.
All right. You can check out my photography on Instagram at GuttermanPhoto, on Facebook at Mike Gutterman Photography. You can email this program at negpositives@gmail.com. You can join the Facebook group, the Negative Positives Film Photo Podcast Facebook group. And we also have an Instagram account under the account name Negative Positives, mostly ran by a friend of the show, Mr. Bryce Randall. If you submit photos to Instagram, think about using the hashtag Negative Positives, and maybe Bryce will see it and highlight it for all of us to check out. You can support this program on Ko-fi. It is www.ko-fi.com/negativepositives. Lastly, if you want to download my four albums that I put out this week for free, or pay what you want for a Creative Commons license. If you have any production work that needs some background music, check out me on Bandcamp. It is www.mikegutterman.bandcamp.com, and those are available for free download for your pleasure or displeasure. So there you go. All right, everybody, have a great week. A huge thanks again to Sam Warner and Mr. Mike Padua for joining us tonight for this roundtable. We will talk to you soon. Everybody stay positive.
And shoot some cool photos.
That turned out great.
That's awesome.
I'm proud of myself personally.
We knew that would be a train wreck, and it did not disappoint. So, all right, thanks, folks, for listening. We'll talk to you soon.
Gutter Man Cave Production.